from Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I was a mayor. The idea of me leading my community into a Chapter 9 solution is the death knell of my existence as a neighbor. Forget the politics. I gotta move, right? The beauty, the functionality of a Chapter 9 is not in the act of actually taking it all the way there, because that's an act of desperation. It's getting everyone to the table.
Chapter 9, in my mind, is at one point an abrogation of political will. If you can't make the tough decisions, you file a Chapter 9, and you allow a judge to administer the pain to a variety of people.
Now, in the last recession, we saw, I think, approximately a 12% drop in tax revenue in the state. I would suggest to you, in that situation, there are a number of municipalities in the state that will only have two choices. They can critically cut services, or they can significantly raise taxes. If there's not a bankruptcy option, that would be the third option. It will be politically unpalatable to raise taxes in that kind of environment.
When's politically palatable for us to raise taxes? When in our legislative cycle does that become easy to do?
A discussion over whether to let Illinois cities file for bankruptcy, kind of emblematic of the entire summer. A lot of discussion followed by no action. But it was a substantive discussion, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show, on towns and whether they can declare bankruptcy or should be allowed to. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel on State Week includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, Brian Mackey, State House Reporter for WUIS and IPR, and our guest this week, first-time guest, Monique Garcia, State House Reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and I'll say the photogenic Monique Garcia.
Oh, thank
I've
you
seen
so
all
much.
Your selfies.
Sadly, not on the radio, but
just trust.
Well, I'll confirm.
The rest of us have that typical face for radio that we've heard about for a long time. We'll talk about that bankruptcy issue in a bit. But the state's running out of money because it's still spending money at last year's levels. Courts have let the state government spend the bulk of the budget so far. And seems like a odd way to have a budget impasse where we just keep setting ourselves up for being in the hole deeper and deeper.
Well, right. I mean, and the governor says that much of this is about him wanting to get state spending under control, but we're on a clip to spend anywhere from $6 to $8 billion more than we have in the bank. And this week you had advocates for people with developmental disabilities who went to court and said, hey, the state hasn't paid us the way that you said that they should. And the judge is considering whether or not to hold the state in contempt of court for that. And the comptroller says, we just don't have the right cash flow, and part of that is because their taxes rolled back.
So we're still waiting to see what money the comptroller's office has actually paid out and in what order that was. And if you take the comptroller's word, it is a matter of literally the money that is in the bank account, that because of all of these court orders, because Illinois is required to make its pension payment, state employees are getting their paychecks and such, that it's just a matter of, sorry, we've got to wait for more dollars to come in order to comply with all of these court orders. As Monique said, when you have the state on par to spend more than it has, it's not like the state's out of money completely right now, just a cash flow issue. Democrats, however, are basically trying to say, hey, they're playing politics with this. It's not that we have not enough money, comptrollers in there. And then the twist, however, is what Monique touched on, that why is it that Illinois doesn't have enough money to make do with all of these consent decrees? It's because the tax increase was allowed to roll back. And so Illinois is making do with less money than it had in the last fiscal year. So it's all of this. And as we tape this show, there are actually several court hearings going on in Cook County that are all intertwined with this. You have so many consent decrees. It's something that the governor has come out and said he doesn't like. It's not allowing him to use these management powers. But then, there's the double speak, the irony there, because Rauner himself was a kind of signatory to and pushed for one of these court issues that it's not a consent decree, but nonetheless a court had gotten involved and said state employees deserve their paychecks despite there being no budget in place. That's something that Rauner wanted, presumably for political reasons.
But a couple clarifications. Real fast, I want to clarify. You mentioned when we're recording this. We are recording at midday on a Friday, so those court hearings, if there's action later in the day after the show is recorded and you're hearing this over the weekend, that would be the reason. And then just one clarification, Amanda, you mentioned the tax rollback. But what you're essentially saying is they're also spending money still at last year's clip, but not without the same amount of money as they
had
last
year.
Because all of these court decrees and the continuing appropriations are predicated upon what the existing law was and what the spending levels from last year were. Plus, the one piece of the budget that the governor signed into law, spending for elementary and secondary education, actually included an increase over last fiscal year. And so, in essence, we're spending at a clip over the full year, spending maybe $36, $37 billion from general funds, and we're only going to have roughly $32 billion coming in because of a couple of factors. One is the rollback of the income tax rates, which, according to the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, is going to cost the state almost $3 billion in less revenue. Plus, the FY15 budget was propped up by borrowing. Yeah, borrowing is not the right word, by, to use a colored word, by by stealing more than $1 billion for funds that were earmarked for other purposes. And so you put that together and we're somewhere in excess of $4 billion short. So we're spending as though we're going to have $36 billion. We're only going to have $32 billion. And that's the difficulty.
And I think that this situation raises the question of, is this kind of finally the tipping point to get people at the negotiating table? There are real concerns that not only can we not pay bills by court order, but we might not be able to pay things like our pension payments or our bond payments. And then what does that do to the state's credit rating? I mean, can we afford a further hit, which would eventually make everything else even more expensive?
The pension payments are number two in line. Number one is the debt service. That trumps everything else in terms of the payments.
I think that's a great point, though, Monique, because we've had how many press conferences now from various human service providers talking about domestic violence shelters that have had to close in Southern Illinois, and people are now getting, if they call the 1-800 helpline, they get referred to a Chicago office to help them. And we've heard places that treat people with developmental disabilities and mental health problems and substance abuse problems saying that they're going to have to lay off staff or probably cease operations if they don't get some relief within the next month or so. Any number of those press conferences do not seem to have made an impression on the top leaders on the Republican side or the Democratic side to at least get them to continue negotiating here. But people do tend to pay attention to the bond rating agencies. At least they have in the past. They've given lip service to that. And so maybe if the state, starts having an even worse bond rating than it already does, which I think is the lowest in the country, maybe that would, get some people's additional attention. Yeah, but at this point, I'm not really hopeful that anything will get anyone's attention.
Well, a thought comes to mind, and by saying it, I'll sound like a populist politician, but it seems like it might work. If indeed they're alleging the state is in contempt of court, let's put the legislative leaders and governor at minimum in jail to deal with it, or all the lawmakers.
I think contempt of court is kind of a word that, it sounds really scary.
Well, I think
really
what the judge suggested was that you're heading in that direction because you're not obeying my order. And I think it was directed at the head of the Department of Human Services. That would be the person whose role.
It'd be more effective to follow my populist stance.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that the law necessarily is going to take the populist approach.
Right, because who's in court? It's the administration that's in court.
Paying more attention to what the statutes are and what legal precedent is. And so it's the plaintiff in the case who is asked to do something and has refused to do it who would be have the greatest liability for being held in contempt. Although arguably the plaintiff, in this case the Department of Human Services, is doing what the chief executive wants it to do.
You mean the defendant, Charlie?
Right, yes. The people who are supposed to produce these records pursuant to the court's order.
I'm interested to see in the state's response, which we should see hopefully today at some point. They're supposed to are supposed to spell out exactly how they've paid the bills, what bills they've prioritized over other things. And this administration has not exactly been completely open with how they've managed to deal with this budget impasse. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of things they are considering should go to the front of the line and what should wait. I mean, we just saw a story today that lottery winners who win more than $25,000 aren't getting paid. You know, arguably you could say, yes, somebody provides mental health services should get paid over somebody who won a scratch off. But it'll be interesting to see.
And there are two other points of this that I think are worthy of note. First being that it's the comptroller, right, who writes the checks, who sends out this order, and ostensibly its own independent office. Of course, however, Leslie Munger has described herself as the wingman of Governor Bruce Rauner. That's something that Democrats have, who want her position in next year's election, have pointed to and saying, hey, she's not operating independently. Munger was appointed by Bruce Rauner. So a lot of eyes on her and political pressure. That's something to watch, kind of that coordination. And then also, as we've noted, the governor has said that he wants to manage the budget. And what a lot of these consent decrees, or not all, but some of them touch on, are services that he had proposed cutting back on. So, for example, kids that were wards of the state, foster kids between the ages of 18 to 21, his proposed budget eliminated services for that. Right now, because they had been in the prior year's budget, that is a service the state is continuing to pay for. So by not coming to any sort of budget resolution, by vetoing the budget, by kind of letting it go to the courts, Rauner has lost his ability to manage in these ways. You'd had, you know, the General Assembly pass a law that the governor subsequently vetoed that would have continued those services, but it doesn't even matter. That law is null and void because it is all moved to this other branch of government.
And one of the things also that I would note about the comptroller's office, the comptroller in most instances can't write checks until the agencies send the vouchers over saying, yes, this is a legitimate claim. We have money in our appropriated account to pay for it. And they send over, I don't know what the medium is. Back in the day, it used to be the tape, and the comptroller's office would run the tape and write the checks overnight as the agencies delivered the stuff at the end of the day. The comptroller says within her office she has roughly $3 billion of backed-up bills to pay, but she estimates there's maybe another $2, $3 billion that the agencies are holding on to that she doesn't really know about because she hasn't been given the materials that she needs to be able to write the checks in the first place. There are some things that she does automatically, like making the pension payments, making the debt service payments. It doesn't matter whether there's an appropriation or not. The law reads that the comptroller and the treasurer together issue these payments no matter what. So that stuff is going out automatically, and no matter what happens in the budget settlement, that will continue to be the case.
You're listening to State Week, our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, and the Chicago Tribune's Monique Garcia. Brian, they were talking bankruptcies at the State House this week, a substantive discussion going on one of those session days. And kind of tell us the crux of this thing.
Yeah, basically this would, the brief headline version is it would allow Detroit-style bankruptcies in Illinois. Right now, Illinois cities cannot go bankrupt. This would say they could. This is being pushed by Republicans. The governor, I believe, is a proponent of this. One of his top legislative allies, Representative Ron Sandeck, who we heard from at the top of the show, Republican, is the one sponsoring the legislation. They brought in some experts earlier this year. This was kind of one of these ongoing rehashes of this. We've now sort of repeating a lot of the debates we had earlier this year as we still, you know, try and as the House tries to look like they're doing something this summer when they're struggling to get people to actually show up for sessions. Fewer than 100 of the 118 people were here this week. But basically the crux is the Republicans say this is a bargaining chip for mayors. They can hold this over the union's heads and say, come to the bargaining table. Maybe we need some concessions. We need some salary cuts or something like that. Opponents of this plan say this is really just a way to undercut labor. This is part of the overall scheme that we've seen from the governor, where a lot of his policy proposals, you know, they have one sort of public ostensible purpose, whether it's freezing property taxes or letting municipalities declare bankruptcy, but also attached to that, there's a way to kind of undermine labor unions, particularly government labor unions. And that's what the opponents of this measure say that it could be.
So is it realistic that the legislature could actually at some point be taking up an issue like whether cities and towns in Illinois could declare bankruptcy? Would that have to go to the voters? How would?
Well, if the legislature were to pass a law, the law could say the city council could put a referendum before their citizens to say, should we declare bankruptcy? Or the law could just give the power to the city council. One of the things that I'm not clear on, if a municipality were to declare bankruptcy, would the people who hold its bonds go to the head of the line to be paid off or not?
That came up in the debate, and apparently the way it's structured in a lot of states, and presumably would be here too, is that, yes, bondholders would get prioritized. Because it's really the people who hold the municipality's debt and the labor unions and pensioners are the two big groups that you can target in one of these bankruptcies. And, what they said is that in other places where they've done this, the best practice seems to be to kind of guarantee for the bondholders, which the opponents of this say, well, that leaves the labor unions and pensioners really the only people holding the bag at the end of the day.
You know, and this is a huge issue. It's rarely been done. Detroit's really kind of the big hallmark example of this. There was a community in California that had done it, and now I believe there were one more in Kentucky that just this month kind of went this route. But this is a rarity. I think it is unlikely, at least anytime soon, that Illinois would look to go this route, despite Republicans talking about it and Rauner putting it on his agenda. We've clearly seen how what his very top priorities so far, that turnaround agenda and the five measures that, in the words of Democrats, have been held hostage to the budget, those haven't gotten far. So it would only be later, I think, that you could see something like this truly ever getting any sort of vote, because there's so much focus, air in the room being taken up by the other measures. But it is something that Rauner has proposed seriously. He's the governor. Republican legislators say that they're serious about it. And Brian, as he noted, I think part of why you're having these hearings is to keep people busy. You know, they're down here. It's this quote unquote continuous summer session. The legislature is here. They don't want to be seen as absent from the seat of state government while the state doesn't have any sort of budget. So it's on one hand keeping them busy. On the other hand, it's also, if you listen carefully to the speaker in these press conferences he's been having about weekly, not this week, however. But Madigan has said, hey, we're taking these seriously. We're giving a proper and thorough vetting to the ideas that Rauner says are there. And this is an example of that. So later on, or if you have the governor saying, hey, I'm trying to compromise, they're not taking my agenda too seriously, they can say, oh, yes, we are.
But to that point that Speaker Madigan says is, you know, look, we've aired these issues. We've voted on them. Some have gone through, some haven't. This is our effort to meet the governor halfway. I mean, there are questions on how sincere that effort is. Absolutely. He's even acknowledged that, yeah, we're building a case to show where our priorities as Democrats lie, and they're very different from the governor's priorities. Very different.
Yeah, and I don't think the governor is particularly interested in having an airing of his ideas or having them vetted or having the public policy behind it articulated and debated. He wants them to do what he says. I mean, what's the matter with him anyway? He's the governor, for Pete's sake.
What I wonder, a question I have, is are cities and towns and counties across the state wanting this power?
You know, Representative Sandak made the point. He is a former mayor of Downers Grove, and he said that you're going to be hard pressed to find mayors who say, yes, I want to take my city and declare bankruptcy, because that is not necessarily a surefire path to reelection and maintaining political power.
Or attracting business to your community.
Right, exactly. No, but I mean, I think.
Or borrowing money for public works
projects. Exactly. The problem is, and one of the elements of this, I think, that is not as frequently or not discussed on the surface, at least at public and committee hearings, is that, you know, there's some racial politics here, too. A lot of the more troubled municipalities in Illinois are where poverty is concentrated, and a lot of those communities are predominantly Black. East St. Louis has had tremendous budget problems. Some of the south suburbs of Chicago have had tremendous budget problems. You're not hearing, you know, Wheaton or Winnetka being talked about as cities that might have to potentially declare bankruptcy. So, I mean, there is that element sort of bubbling under the surface as to who is this really targeting, you know, in the state. So, I'm with Amanda. I don't think this is necessarily going anywhere, but I mean, it is, you know, it's an interesting discussion.
Certainly, if towns were to ever add in the cost of what it would really cost to bring infrastructure up to date, sewer systems, they would all, if they could, I would think, declare bankruptcy so they could get everything off their books and actually afford to fix a sewer system.
But once they've declared bankruptcy, they'd be hard-pressed to borrow the money to do the infrastructure, I would suspect.
And bankruptcy's not cheap.
Let's fax.
he's big into the facts. That's old-fashioned thinking. They talked about Detroit, where there was something like $800 million to play with in the reorganization. $200 million of that was for fees for the bankruptcy. So, the people who are advocates of that say, well, you know what? Detroit is still better off than it was before it declared bankruptcy. But, that is a debatable point.
Going to the fuzzy math department, Illinois State Fair released its attendance numbers, and we haven't really paid too much attention to those every year. They get a mention, and it would appear that attendance showed about 400,000 people, a little over that, for the State Fair this year. That's only about half of what they said attendance was last year, but a new State Fair manager says, people weren't being so honest. I'm making those words up, not necessarily using his
inflated, quote. I think was the word he used.
They were estimates.
Estimates. and so what are we seeing? Have we been lied to all these years? In 1998 or 99, George Ryan's first year as governor, and all the fanfare about how that was record attendance that year with that new government, and everybody was so excited. Was I all excited about an attendance record for nothing?
Bill, of course, it's hard for any of us to say we are not those ticket clickers. At least I can speak for Monique and I. We helped the attendance numbers at the fair, where they're often covering events there, starting from the parade where Bruce Rauner said he loved it and answered questions about why is the state even having this while there is a budget impasse. What I guess gives some credence.
Didn't answer questions at that. I just answer questions.
It was about a 30-second soundbite.
Did you ride the tilt-a-whirl while you were reporting?
No, but we did go on the Ferris wheel after.
Yes, we did.
Oh, okay.
We did. use your symbolism there or what have you. Ferris wheel of the state budget, go for it. What gives some credence to the brand new fair director, Patrick Buchan's argument that there may have been some inflation of attendance in the past is that the state revenue for this fair didn't drop by all that much, just $55,000 less than the state took in last year. So that makes it really hard to parse those figures. If you have attendance drop by more than half, you know, some missing 400,000 people, how do you only have $55,000 less in revenue? So it seems as if there was some fishy business. I do think you could say that, yes, the state fair did lose some attendance this year. It just felt that way. Part of that could be it was held later in the year. The
school
state fair has to be held a certain time by law. And there are, of course, you know, all of these, the carnival rides that are on their own circuit. And so this is programmed for a long time. School had already started, so you didn't see a lot of people maybe buying their mega passes or coming as often. That could be part of it as well. Because of the budget impasse, there was no harness racing or not the same amount of harness racing. So there would be some decline in attendance from that. So it is hard to tell. That said, with these new numbers, Illinois is drastically behind other states when it comes to their state fair attendance. So if Illinois was inflating, maybe elsewhere they are or were doing the same thing.
Well, Amanda, and some are held in metro areas where ours is held in a little smaller area further from population centers.
Yeah, that's right. And I would just not underestimate the effect of Meatloaf canceling his concert. Would have had
I was so, so sad about yes. that. I absolutely was so sad about that.
Still am.
But it will be interesting to see... And they talked to a former state fair manager who said, well, they had a formula. So it's the same formulas that authorities use for estimating attendance at all sorts of events where no real head count is taken.
Yeah, that's like there's a political rally and the sponsors say, oh, we had 100,000 people. And law enforcement says, well, there were maybe 20,000. You know, take your guess.
Right. The real figures are probably somewhere in the middle. But this was an odd kind of acknowledgement for the administration to send out this press release with no explanation that just says, look, our numbers have dropped in half. And then kind of a day later, the fair manager stuck trying to explain what happened.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
It's kind of bad PR. Mm-hmm.
Although it might actually be honest. So
maybe it's refreshing.
It is. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how numbers bode in future years, future administrations.
It'll double next year.
It strikes me, and we were talking about this before the show, if you really wanted to know, couldn't you just hire some student or something to stand there with a clicker and count people as they walk through the gates?
I think they do usually have clickers a lot of times. So I'm not sure. I have not done that. I enjoy being in the fair and not at the gates.
Right. But when I went and I'd park or I'd talk to vendors mm-hmm. and they said that it just seemed like there weren't as many people there or the people who were there weren't really buying as much as they were. Like I went straight up to the Vo's corn dog stand three times and normally you have to wait in line. Yeah. There was no line.
And we use the same
anecdotal
measurements. We all have our own style. I won't know until I check with my friendly Rotary Club to see how their parking lot did revenue-wise. Well, we got a couple of minutes left in the show and try to get a couple of notes from the field in, and I'll start with Amanda Venicky.
So speaking of fun times, the governor a while back had said that he was going to bring a bunch of his biker friends on down to the Capitol for a party at the governor's mansion. That, in fact, did happen last weekend. I live in downtown Springfield and couldn't quite hear it from my apartment, but pretty darn close. From blocks away, you could hear that heavy metal music playing. I'm imagining if it wasn't the governor who was holding this party, that there would have been a lot of noise complaints for the city police department to act on. I caught Rauner. This was a bunch of veterans and other groups that biked with him basically from Chicago on down. He was there in his black motorcycle vest and smoking a stogie.
And following up on that, Amanda, I was eating a couple of blocks away. I thought somebody had their car stereo up real loud for a little while, and then we finally figured out it was coming from the governor's mansion.
Oh, yeah, it was a live band.
We have a minute left. Monique?
Well, I would just like to note that next week is when House and Senate candidates start to collect signatures to get on the ballot. So if you thought that the campaigning didn't end, it's not, and it's not going to. It's going to be a constant kind of thing here that's going to even more impact the budget impasse we have here as candidates are asked to weigh in on where they stand on things and where lawmakers here try to build a record to protect themselves.
And that is our time for this week's edition of State Week. Thank you to Monique Garcia of the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.